listening to another Netcast production brought to you by the Fancy Pants Gangsters at FancyPantsGangsters.com. Because those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet.
This is Blogulator Radio. I'm Qualler.
I am Bridget.
And we are here tonight. We are here to talk about a couple different things. Bridget and Qualler are going to be talking about Friday Night Lights. And
Friday Night Lie, as we call it.
Yeah, we do call it Friday Night Lie. And we're going to be giving kind of a halftime speech, if you will, to said show. It's aired 8 episodes now on NBC this fall.
Mm-hmm.
And we're caught up through 7 of them, and it seems like a good time to check in and
give a little halftime update. And we're going to be giving you kind of a mini segment, and then the second half of this netcast from the Blogulator is going to be brought to you by Chris and Jerksica, who will be talking about one of their favorite shows, Veronica Mars.
And why are they talking about Veronica Mars, Bridget?
We got an event coming up.
An event? Where?
At
the Red Stag Supper Club.
Dun, 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 dun.
In Minneapolis, Minnesota. Next Monday night, which is the 13th of June.
I believe that's right.
Red Stag Supper Club. We're co-hosting an event with Girl Germs, our co-netcasters here on the Fancy Pants Gangsters Network.
This is something that they've been doing for a long time, a TV party, and it centers around television shows that are empowering to women. This week is going to feature episodes of Veronica Mars. So come to the Red Stag Supper Club around 9 p.m. There's going to be a DJ, 3 episodes of V-Mars, handpicked by our very own Chris, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
I didn't know that women could be empowered, Bridget.
Well, they can sometimes. One such empowered woman is not Julie Taylor.
Good segue. So with that, Julie Taylor has... She's had some difficulties in season 5.
What is going on with you?
Yeah. You know, she's
had
some...
Come on, hon. She's having some troubles. She's sleeping with her professor, TA, whatever. The TA's wife found her, called her a slut, and slapped her in front of everyone. To deal with that, she showed up at home to avoid going back to school, crashed her car on purpose into a mailbox.
That really kind of broke my heart.
Yeah, it kind of broke my heart, too. It seemed a little out of left field, too.
What part
of it called? The car crash. I don't know. It just seems like she's really going off the deep end in a way that I feel like the Julie Taylor character sort of already has.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I kind of hope she'd be over this.
Well,
childish behavior.
I don't know. Childish. At first, I really thought this was kind of the weak link plot of the show,
mm-hmm.
of season 5. Of course, season 5 being the final season of Friday Night Lights.
Always.
Friday Night Lie. Bridget is talking about what the series finale episode title is.
It's always. And which, isn't that enough to make you cry?
Yeah, actually, this weekend we were at a wedding and we were slow dancing to... What were we slow dancing to, Bridget?
The Luckiest, I believe.
Oh, The Luckiest by Ben Folds. And Bridget just said, hey, Mark, always.
And we both started crying.
We both literally started crying a little bit.
So that's what...
And we haven't even seen the season finale yet.
We don't have to.
We don't.
But yeah, back to Julie Taylor and her kind of downward spiral. I agree with you, Mark, or Qualler. Qualler?
Just go with it.
It's been sort of a weaker storyline this season,
well,
except I think the last couple episodes have bringing her back into the family and kind of connecting it back to Coach and Mrs. Coach.
I think
that's kind of made it better for me.
Yeah, I think the ends justify the means in a way.
Explain that.
In that the ends of getting Julie, eventually we had to get Julie to a place where we were going to get her back home and have some kind of crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ends. The means in this case were. Julie having this kind of gross affair with this TA, who, mm-hmm. by the way, like, Bridget, as a PhD student,
mm-hmm.
I know that you often hit on your students
all the time.
And say, like,
mm-hmm.
oh, my husband just, He just doesn't get it.
He doesn't understand me, but you do, freshman.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like this is a... I think what irritated me about this plot was not even this specific plot or how it was implemented, but it was because this is such a common television trope.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like kids... The girl goes off to college, and she inevitably will have a hot TA professor who looks like he's played by someone about her age, and who will, of course, sleep with her. And I feel like it always ends kind of poorly.
Yeah.
Like, he's always married, that's the twist. I just feel like I've seen this before, and, like, they didn't even put their typical Friday Night Lights special twist on it, because I feel like
What's the special Friday Night Lights twist?
You can't explain it in words. It's the magic, the Coach Taylor magic that makes it okay. I feel like the show uses weird, like, TV drama tropes, and I feel like it's usually okay. Well, for example, the show is kind of about how, like, or, like, the later seasons of the show are kind of about how football has brought hope to an urban school. Not urban, but, you know, the wrong side of the track sort of school.
Sure, that's
a common trope in movies and television, but they do it with heart, and they do it well. I don't feel like they use the young woman, naive woman, goes off to college, sleeps with professor, and it comes back to literally slap her in the face. I don't feel like they did that very well.
Really? I really felt that
played out to me.
That was like a real slap in the face.
You liked that scene?
No, I actually liked how that turned out, and how I liked that scene, and I liked how she came home. Mm. And didn't you feel like when Eric and Tammy were mad and disappointed at Julie, that they were a little disappointed in you too?
Oh yeah, I felt guilty. And I guess that's what I was trying to say earlier. I liked it when they brought her back home and it became about, again, her interactions with Julie and Eric Taylor. I feel like they made that story okay for me. But when it was just Julie off at school, I was a lot, snooze fest, I don't really care. Like, that's how I felt about it.
Yeah, it was kind of boring, but I think
so I get what you're saying, the ends justify the means. The ends were that they brought her back home.
Yeah, and it was kind of boring at first, slash I was just really mad at Julie.
Yeah.
Although, like, Bridget, I kept saying, like, God, I'm so mad at Julie right now. And you said, well, she's a freshman, so I'm kind of surprised that you're kind of...
Well, I wasn't mad at no point was I mad at Julie. That, like, I just felt like, looking back on that story arc, it was kind of a been there, done that.
Sure.
Thing.
Sure.
But it doesn't make me mad at Julie for how she was acting.
Well, let's move on to...
Yeah, I've been kind of Julie-centric.
That was kind of the one gripe we might have with season 5. The only other gripe I might have, and it's not really a gripe, it's more just like the first couple episodes were kind of slow. Or that they didn't have, like, the goosebump raising types.
Yeah, not as many tears per minutes as you would expect.
Right, but I thought, Bridget, that the third episode, we got into Vince's dad returning from jail.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of the first, like, oh, here's the show we know that we cry at all the time.
Okay, when Vince told his mom that she was the most beautiful woman in the world, is that what he said?
Yeah.
That was it for me.
That was pretty nice.
The Vince, his mother, and his father dynamic and those interactions are just poignant. I think they're great. I think they've done a good job of making Vince's dad a real three-dimensional character.
Yeah.
Who is, like, still ultimately kind of disappointing them, but at the same time, he's kind of taking care of his family. Right?
He's doing it the way that he knows how, which
is... Right.
Not necessarily the best way, but it's the way that he knows, and now we're kind of further into the season, our dogs are panting.
You might hear some panting dogs in the background, because it's hot as a Texas day in summer.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he's doing what he thinks he should do, and as a result, it's creating for Vince. It's creating... It's kind of... His influence is rubbing off on Vince, but not, I don't think, in a very good way. A very positive way. I think before... in season 4, Vince was kind of... it was about him trying to do good. And now it's kind of about him breaking bad, if you will.
I will. I think, well, it's interesting because Vince is kind of one of the more, like, I guess, lost souls on the show. And it seems like he was first kind of picked up by Coach Taylor. And Coach Taylor was obviously a father figure for him. And
yeah.
He was, so his idea of doing good was following Coach Taylor. Now it seems like his idea of doing good is following his dad. And mm-hmm. what I'm kind of ready to see, and I hope will happen in the second part.
Second half
of this season. Second half. Take two.
Football metaphor.
This is our halftime speech.
Football metaphor.
Y'all, clear eyes. But what I hope to see in the second half is that Vince goes out there and he's not playing for Coach anymore and he's not playing for his dad and then he finally starts playing for Vince.
Mm.
And that he finally starts following...
Always.
Always. I think he's a good character. He's a strong character. He's a good man. He loves his mama. Mm. But I feel like he's kind of been going from whatever Coach says, that's how I can be good, to whatever my dad says. And now I'm ready for him to start saying it's about what Vince says. I'm ready for him to start calling the shots. As QB, that's what I want him to do in the second
half
of this
QB,
game.
Well, as QB, he should say what's best for the East Dillon Lions.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be playing for himself. He should be playing for the team, Bridget.
For the team.
For the
right.
team.
But he needs to follow his heart.
What do you think, what's been your favorite scene of the season
so
far?
Oh, man. Well, I just mentioned, when Vince tells his mother that she's the most beautiful woman in the world.
That was your favorite scene.
That was pretty heartbreaking. That was a pretty heartbreaking, okay. I mean, in a good way. Like, that made my...
Okay.
Made me swallow a little bit, but,
I have... Okay.
But the other scene that I actually really liked, which is maybe kind of trite, but, what's the curly-haired girl? Kind of funny looking? Living with the Riggins.
I can't remember Madison Burge, the actress's name.
Okay, Cindy, Susie,
no,
Lucy,
Susie.
Lucy,
you know,
Shelley, Maybelline.
The hottie.
Right. The curly-haired girl living with the Riggins when she and Mrs. Riggin,
mm-hmm.
formerly
mm-hmm.
sister to, or I guess still sister to Tyra.
Billy and, damn it, why can't we, okay, research.
When,
your favorite scene.
My favorite scene is when Mrs. Riggin goes to drop a curly-haired girl off at her stepmom's house and
okay.
her dad's house.
Okay.
And up to that point, they hadn't been getting along. I think she saw her as a threat, right?
Uh-huh.
She was happy to see her go. And at that moment, there's a scene between her and her stepmom, and the stepmom is not being very nice, and at that point, Mrs. Riggins kind of gets all mama bird and comes out of the car, and she says, get in the car, and at that point, she really, like, gets that this
Becky.
Girl... Becky, that's it.
Doi.
Becky and...
This is really embarrassing.
I know, considering this is one of our favorite shows that we just gush about. Well, she kind of goes out and I think for the first time sees that Becky really needs her and that she can be something for her, that she can be sort of a mother figure to her.
That was your favorite scene?
I really liked that scene. I thought it was a great scene, and she just said, and the way that she just the expression on her face when she's like, from going and dropping her off to her sitting in the truck and kind of witnessing this little domestic spat to going up and saying, Becky, just get in the car. Like, I don't know. I really liked that.
That was a good scene.
Mm-hmm.
I have two.
Okay, go ahead.
The first one is the balcony scene mm-hmm. in episode 5, The Kingdom.
Well, see, it's no fair because you prepared for this. It's your question.
Well, I know, but I wanted to set you up like Vince Howard maybe throwing an outlet pass over to Hastings Ruckel, or Luke. More likely to Luke. I love that name, Hastings Ruckel. That's
just
name. Ridiculous. No, when they're all on the balcony at the hotel night before the game against the Kingdom, Texas football mm-hmm. team, and Coach Taylor is just silently listening to them in the balcony below.
Oh, yeah.
And he's kind of leaning back, and he hears, he hears Luke, and he hears Vince, and he hears, what's the big guy's name?
I don't know. That
big
guy.
Offensive lineman. and then and Hastings Ruckle, and they're all kind of bonding, mm-hmm. and Coach Taylor is just kind of taking it in.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was my first scene where I started to tear up, and then at the end of the episode where I think Hastings asks Coach Taylor, jokingly, of course,
mm-hmm.
Are we there yet, Coach?
On the way home.
And Coach says, we're not there yet, but we're getting there.
Oh, gosh, I'm going to cry now. No. Just yeah, because they're not there yet, but they're getting there.
Yeah.
They're
so
getting there.
That was the moment that I really... Yeah.
Boys becoming men.
I know.
Way down yonder on a catechuchy.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that was the moment that I was like, okay, I better get some Kleenex ready for the last... 7 episodes, and that was it. That was, I think, I expect to cry a lot in the last 6 episodes,
mm-hmm.
of the final season of Friday Night Lights.
Always. Let's end it there.
So yeah,
always.
Should we kiss now or?
Yeah, we're actually making love.
Yeah. So that was our talk on Friday Night Lights. Here's Chris and Jerksica to talk about Veronica Mars.
Before we go in there, you should probably know something about Veronica Mars. We need to be careful with this one. She's slippery.
Thank you, Qualler and Bridget. We're back here on Vlogulator Radio. My name's Chris.
And I'm Jerksica.
And we're here to talk with you about a little show called Veronica Mars.
V-Mars!
It's one of our favorites of all time. Dirk Scott and I got addicted to it a few years ago and watched all 3 seasons almost in about as much time as it takes to make a frozen pizza.
I think it was like a year ago.
It was just a year ago?
It's just you mourn the loss of the series so much that it seems like ages since we've seen a V-Mars ep.
It's true. Well, the reason we're bringing back today, not only because it's awesome, because it's the beginning of summer and there are less new shows to talk about, but we are also presenting a TV party at the Red Stag Supper Club.
Woo!
In Northeast Minneapolis, co-sponsoring it actually with our friends Girl Germs, who are another show here on the fine Fancy Pants Gangsters Network. That'll be this Monday, June 13th, at the Red Stag, 9 p.m., all-ages event, and there's going to be cheap drinks, some trivia to earn some Red Stag gift cards, and V-Mars projected on big screen for all to enjoy in. I'll be picking my favorite 3 episodes, and Dirk Sky might ask for your input on...
Oh, maybe. Maybe he'll ask
maybe.
My input. We'll
maybe.
See.
We'll see. But you can find write-ups about it at theblogulator.com as well as girlgermsradio.wordpress.com. But let's get into it. Let's talk first of all, for those that are unfamiliar for whatever reason, what Veronica Mars is about. So we got Veronica Mars played by Kristen Bell. I think that's basically all I knew about the show going into it. I knew that there
that's
was,
all you needed to know.
That's all I personally needed
right.
to know. Being a Kristen Bell fan, but I knew there was some kind of teen drama element. I knew there was some kind of crime drama element, and I really didn't pay any attention to the show until my favorite TV bloggers started talking about how they started missing the show around the time we started watching it. And so I thought I'd give it a whirl, even though it was a UPN/CW show. It actually
so it was Roswell.
Yeah, so it was one of your favorite shows, Roswell. But
I don't like
no. But would you agree, like in all seriousness, that Veronica Mars actually, while having some of the tropes of a teen drama, really kind of surpassed that usual element of the soap opera type things you usually see in something like Roswell or Dawson's Creek?
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing. And I think they do an awesome job in that show of mixing sort of episodic storylines with an overarching... I guess it's not series plot, but
a
season-long arc. Yeah.
And oh yeah, that's definitely, I think, one of the things it does best, I think, Justified, a show that I like a lot that's on now, is the closest thing that does the similar type of a formula. But Veronica Mars, I think, wowed me so much because it still had a lot of the teen drama elements that bring you in, you know, kind of the gossipy cliques that go against each other. But Kristen Bell's Veronica Mars is so much more badass because she takes it to one next level and actually investigates which of those douchebags at your high school are date rapists and which of them are thieves and what have you. And I think to talk about it season by season, I think it's a pretty common, well-known fact that it does decline slightly in quality with every season of the three that it was allowed before it was brutally canceled by the CW.
I disagree.
No? You think?
I think the third season, admittedly,
right,
is difficult because there's the transition from high school to college, which is tricky for, I mean, that's sort of the rub of every, like, teen drama.
Yeah, that's,
you know, how do you get, you know, how do you get from high school to college and have it be the same?
Because technically then it wouldn't be a teen drama anymore. Yeah. They're turning 20. Yeah.
But I think seasons 1 and 2, although they deal with different mysteries, both stellar.
Okay. And I mean, I still love all three seasons. I think there's phenomenal episodes in all three of the seasons. I just think that the first one, with the overarching mystery of Lily Kane's death, which is played by Amanda Seyfried, is the girlfriend of Logan Eccles, who is the kind of will-they-won't-they opposite of Kristen Bell's Veronica Mars. I have a thing for Veronica, and Jerkska has a little bit of a thing for Logan, so...
True story.
We kind of live with each other's...
Without the bleach hair, but...
Yeah. you don't dig the spiky bleach hair?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why you like the later seasons just as well, because he becomes less...
and more emo.
Well, that's actually one of my favorite things about how it goes from first to third season, yeah, is that Logan starts off as the giant douchebag that may or may not be a suspect in Lily Kane's death, but then he becomes more and more of a sympathetic anti-hero as the show goes
on.
Who
also may or may not be a suspect in other...
Right. Yeah. That's the wonderful thing about his character, is that they keep you guessing, but you never think that they're doing it just for the sake of mystery. They're doing it because he's a very conflicted and complex guy.
Right. Well, and that's why I think I disagree with you a little bit about the transition from season 1 to season 2. Because I think that in the same way that his character evolves, Kristen Bell's character evolves, and talking about her as a strong female character that's really badass solving mysteries, I think it really takes till the second season for a lot of her motivation and family backstory to really catch up.
I think that's
true. The character development. So I feel like in the second season, like, because the first season you're like, yeah, Veronica Mars is so badass, she's totally gonna figure out who solved her or who killed her best friend. And then in the second season, it's like, yeah, she's totally badass, but she's dealing with all these complex.
True, because you find out who murdered Lily Kane in season 1. We're not gonna tell you for those of you who haven't seen it, but she's got to deal with the fact that she was badass enough to solve that crime, but is also still dealing with the repercussions of who that ended up being and her life post solving this crime.
Yeah, there's this whole family story that needs to unravel.
Yeah, and actually one of my favorite things, more so even than Logan, that I enjoy about this show is the relationship between her and her dad throughout all three seasons. Keith Mars, played by Enrico Colantoni of Just Shoot
Me.
That
was impressive, yeah.
I'm 90% sure I pronounced that right. I apologize if I didn't. But
that almost makes you want to revisit Just Shoot Me.
Almost.
Except not,
because he's one of the reasons why, like, when we started the first episode, I had no idea he played her dad when we started watching it. And I'm like, really? The guy from Just Shoot Me is going to be, like, a dramatic-ish type role as, like, her paternal figure? And
he
actually surprised me. I think he's really excellent as her dad. And I think a large part of it also is the script writing.
Yeah.
But I think it's very, very rare that you see a father-daughter relationship like that on TV.
That's what I was going to say, is because you referenced him as a paternal character, and I mean, he is in the most literal sense, you know, as her father. But I think that whole relationship throughout the seasons avoids what I think would be a really easy trap for the show, for the writers, in that it's just the two of them for most of the series. Living together, father and daughter. He, by profession, is a professional investigator. And so it would be really easy for it to be about, yeah, isn't it cute that Veronica Mars is taking her own initiatives and solving this crime, but then in the end, you know, father has to swoop in and save the day. And although I think that there are pieces of that, because they have a strong relationship, so... The story becomes about their relationship as well as Veronica's relationship to all the other characters in this world, that it really is more about Veronica sort of leading the way.
Yeah.
You know, and it's also not like her dad is like some clueless, like, dope either. And, like, Veronica has the upper hand on her, like, you know,
right. And
comedic
I think,
relief father.
And I think it's interesting that, I mean, because you'd think, at least when I started watching it, because you find out he's kind of deflated because he's an ex-sheriff who's become a private investigator.
Right, stripped of his badge.
Right. And so you could easily go that route of making him the bumbling guy.
Yeah.
That can't do anything while his, you know, smarmy teenage daughter is able to solve everything. But going back to the idea of that Veronica Mars always makes sure to deal with the ramifications of what happened before.
Yeah.
When he does swoop in and help her, or when she does get the upper hand on him, there's always that kind of conflict between them. But it never gets to the point where they're kind of raving mad at each other. You always know that there's like a loving support system between the two, and they make it just complex enough that it kind of makes it very vague, and you're wondering how their relationship's going to end up. But at the same time, you know that it's still strong underneath, and so it's never to, like I said, it's never soap opera-y. It's never over the top. It's never melodramatic. And part of the reason for that is because they are both so good at the witty retorts back and forth with each other, but really underneath that is a stronger support system than I think you'd normally see between the parents and the kids. Usually on teen drama, the parents have their boring subplot. I remember when we watched The OC, even though that's maybe a finer example of the teen drama, even on that show, when the parents showed up on screen, we would talk because we'd be waiting for the teens to come back in and have the real conflict.
Or we'd talk about Peter Gallagher's eyebrows
right.
the whole episode. But yeah,
and his bagel,
I mean,
and schmear.
Yeah, no.
But
that's true.
And I like that with Veronica Mars. And one of the other trappings that I think you'd typically come in with talking about Veronica Mars as a strong female character is, you know, father-daughter relationship. The father's always going to wonder who the daughter dates. And while, you know, there's romance subplots throughout all three seasons of Veronica Mars with Veronica, it never gets to the point where, like, Keith is hovering over her or is being super judgmental of her boyfriends. Mm-hmm. He's always very trusting. And sometimes it's to a fault, but most of the time, it shows the benefit in being the kind of parental figure that doesn't necessarily fall into the, you know, the stereotypical role.
Well, and when he is being protective, it doesn't seem, I mean, it seems balanced because it's in the context of that trust and the other balanced parts of the relationship. You know, I was going to ask, I'm not, since we watched it so far past when it aired, do you know when the show actually aired?
2004 to 2007.
So, because I think that's a really interesting, like, time in television teen land, because it's definitely, you know, it was airing at the same time as The OC, but past things like Dawson's Creek. I mean, I think Dawson's Creek was done. No, it still was running, but it was riding that jump shark
exactly.
all the way off.
It was gasping
the
for
ocean
air.
Cliff. Where do you ride it? I don't know if you jump a shark, where you ride it to. But
well, you're jumping over the shark.
Okay, I'm gonna work on that.
You work on that
analogy. Yeah.
Okay.
But I think you talked about, you know, witty retorts between Veronica and her dad, and definitely one of the things that's so enjoyable about the show is the witty dialogue, but it's also not the kind of witty dialogue that, you know, people parodied Dawson's Creek about, where I wouldn't argue that the characters are not, like, self-aware, but they're not self-aware to maybe the extreme that, like, late 90s you know, teens were.
Well, and I think it's because they kind of were dealing in the wake of that kind of over the top Kevin Williamson self-referential thing.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, for a reference point, I mean, Rob Thomas went on to create Party Down, which I think is going to go down as one of the best television comedies of all time, if I have my way. But for people that are familiar with that show but not Veronica Mars, I think you can see a direct correlation in the fact that it's very much centered around being witty, but not necessarily to the point where it's out of the realm of reality.
It's not like how witty. It's not the characters outwittying each other.
Right.
It's not outwitting, but outwittying each other.
Exactly. Yeah. It's natural, but it also kind of is sharp and jumps out at you, which is a nice balance, I think.
It's how you wish you could talk.
Right.
In your regular life.
Right, because you wouldn't actually want to talk like somebody from Dawson's Creek or the Scream movies.
Well, unless you really like getting punched in the face.
Exactly.
If that's your bag, then, you know, go for it.
Going back to, I'll make my defense about why I love the first season a little more than the second and third. I still think the second's better than the third because I think the third one they were dealing both with the college transition and cancellation. But
and loss of some characters.
And loss of, yeah, characters. One of my favorites, which is Weevil. And I think that they did some great things with Weevil as the janitor of the campus in the third season, but it almost felt tacked on in some way. But
it was like when Mr. Feeny
on
Boy Meets World suddenly became a college professor when they went to
I teach college. Here now, Corey. Yeah. Whatever his name is.
It's good.
It is? Okay.
Mr. Matthews.
And so in the first season, we have like this very intense season-long arc that's very kind of meticulously crafted in advance, clearly, of Lily Kane's death and who's Veronica's best friend and Logan's girlfriend. And so she goes into researching and trying to find like the underbelly of Neptune, which is the city they live in, both of their high school and their general town. And while we get to be introduced to all this great ensemble, including people like Weevil and Duncan's father and so on and so forth, we get this really rich kind of tapestry where I was just kind of sucked into this world. A lot of people compare Veronica Mars to like a modern noir almost, mm-hmm. because it's almost like Lynchian in the most accessible way possible, because it shows this, you know, idyllic town mm-hmm. on the surface, the perfect high school with the average cliques, etc., and then underneath is this seedy underbelly mm-hmm. a la Blue Velvet or something like that.
Well, they definitely played with that idea and the aesthetic too. I mean, like in terms of like light and dark and shadows, I think that became more, I don't know, they focused a lot more on that in the first season too, which I think may be one of the reasons that you like it so much.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because you say you get sucked into this tapestry of characters, and it would almost appear, you know, like you're just, for describing the characters to people who haven't watched Veronica Mars, it's like this whole laundry list of characters. It sounds like, how would you ever not only keep characters straight, but also have any interest in them, have mm-hmm. any like vested interest in what happens to them. And that's what I think is so phenomenal about the show, is that you definitely care about what's going to happen to each character. And I mean, you and I definitely would sit and sort of check people off as suspects or not.
Right.
And even when it seemed like all sides were pointing to, you know, one particular character that we really liked, we would do everything we could to sort of create this like lore about how maybe it's not them, because we wanted good things to happen to them and we wanted them to be good. And,
exactly. I think part of that, actually, that trying to back and forth is something we haven't mentioned yet, is that I think especially for a teen drama, Veronica Mars deals with class issues in a way in which I think the OC once again tried to, but failed miserably in that you actually see not only a seedy underbelly ethically and morally of all characters in this town, but between, you know, you've got the lower class, then you got the middle class, and then you've got the upper class, and they're all in this town together. And it might seem kind of absurd that they're all commingling within episodes, but it's done in such a way where you kind of believe Veronica Mars is this middle class person that can link easily to one group or the other, depending on which way she frames herself, mm-hmm. especially having her dad as an ex-sheriff, but still an ex-sheriff that mm-hmm. supposedly was stripped of that badge because of some supposedly morally conspicuous things.
Yeah, and how that affected her social status as a result of that, I think is, I don't know, interesting.
In sum, Veronica Mars is awesome, and you could talk for hours and hours about it. And we hope that you join us next Monday, along with Girl Germs, Dana and Anna, put together this monthly series that we'll be helping out with, at least for a little while. In July, they've got Roseanne coming up, so we'll talk about Roseanne next month. But right now, let's focus on Veronica Mars, Monday, June 13th at the Red Stag Supper Club, 9 p.m. There'll be a Girl Germs DJ until 9:30. Then we'll play three best episodes, in our opinion, of one of the best shows of all time.
Oh, your opinion became our opinion very quickly, didn't it?
I think we'll agree? Yeah.
All right.
I think we'll be able to come to some consensus.
We'll find out, listeners.
Thanks for listening to Blogulator Radio. You can find more info on our TV and other pop culture ramblings at theblogulator.com, including a write-up about Veronica Mars. And you can download more episodes at fancypantsgangsters.com.
Note the absence of a silver platter. This was more to steer you in the right direction than to say, do your job for you. Actually, it was doing your job for you. Getting admissible evidence seems like the least you can do.